I'm sorry to interrupt some great conversations. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago. On behalf of our Board of Governors, welcome to City Club of Chicago. We're joined today by our Chairwoman, Jackie Robinson Ivey, who you heard from a little bit earlier. Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. We have such an amazing group of people, and I'm just going to go through this. Well, first of all, what a sellout. Thank you, Commissioner Gaynor and Jessica and our panel. Quite a draw, hence all of the seating arrangements, but it looks like everybody found a seat. Thank you for working with us on that. And we couldn't do all this without our sponsors. So I'm just going to go through, and we can applaud at the end if you don't mind. Aon, of course, Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives, Cook County Land Bank Authority, Loop Capital Markets, McLaurin Development Partners, the Obama Foundation, Rise Strategy Group, very helpful here, a Gergon Group, IFF, Neighborhood Housing Services of Chicago, and Northern Trust, and of course Related Midwest. Thank you very much. Your sponsorship allows us to share this platform, and it doesn't go certainly unnoticed and recognized, but we appreciate that very much. Every table at one of these means another program that we can have. Every sellout allows us to have two or three more of these, and it is very much appreciated. So thank you. And what else is really appreciated? City Club, as so many of you know, there's so many familiar faces here, many who I'll mention right now, but we bring together the best of the best in Chicago, and it's from elected officials to philanthropists to business leaders, nonprofit leaders, and of course government employees and you know, commissioners and the like. So I'm going to attempt to do this without, again, applause, if we could, until the end. Well, let's start with applause for our very special guest, Tony Preckwinkle, the president. The president of the Cook County Board, Madam President, such a great supporter of City Club. Every one of these folks deserves that same applause, but I had to do that. Congressman Bobby Rush, I believe, is here. I have not seen him, but I just got a note that he is in the room. A few city council members are here, hopefully not a quorum. We have Alderman Walter Burnett, who, by the way, we're so sorry about the loss of your mother, Alderman, and we're all thinking, the City Club family's thinking of you at the loss of your mother. Thank you for being here. Alderman Gil Villegas is here. Alderman Byron Cicho Lopez is not here yet, but he's on his way. Oh, he is here. Oh, okay. There's an open seat up front now. Okay. Commissioner Bridget Degnan is here. Commissioner Donna Moore. Colleagues of Commissioner Gaynor, of course. Another commissioner, a different type of commissioner, Sierra Boatwright, the planning commissioner and future City Club speaker, right? I believe Commissioner Clint Hedspeth is here from D-Case. Inspector General Deb Witzberg, right up in front here. And just, like I said, such a great sampling of business and nonprofit leaders. Mary Ellen Karen is here from After School Matters. Peter O'Brien is here. David Doig, thank you for being here and sponsoring. David does so much for the city. Karen Freeman Wilson, Mayor, where are you? Thank you. Also a future and past City Club speaker. Sean Garrett's here from United Way. Thank you, Sean. One of my favorites, Sister Katie Norris, is back in town. Sister Katie is back at the what we'll know as the Yaya's table, which is another explanation for later. Anna Demakopoulos is here, the state's attorney's office. Very busy woman. Jim Reynolds, thank you, Jim. We're going to hear from him on the panel. Jim's always so great to the entire civic community in Chicago. Commissioner Rachel Arfa is here, one of our favorite speakers also. Commissioner, where are you, if you could raise? Thank you for being here. I'm sure I missed a few people, but there are also a few people I wouldn't be here without. My parents are here, Tom and Kathy Gibbons, and their friends Fran Casey and the Belassas. I think Commissioner Gaynor would say the same. We, both of us, would not be here with this crew. And, of course, the Gaynor family and Jerry Gaynor. And her sisters. I said the Yayas because those are our mothers and their friends, and you know you're doing something right when you have a quorum of the Yayas at your event. So I'm very proud of what we're doing here and the fact that they decided to show up. I think it's for Bridget, though, not so much for me. Thank you for indulging me in that. We've got a great program, a number of speakers. Commissioner Gaynor is going to introduce the panel. I didn't introduce them intentionally because she knows them all so much better, and we'll add some commentary. But we do also have hopefully time for questions at the end. So if you, I'll have a mic here, and I may be able to get some from the audience, or if you want to write them out, you can pass them on up. And let's look forward to a great discussion. Thanks for being here at City Club. I'd now like to introduce Cook County Commissioner, who really doesn't need much of an introduction. I think everyone in this room knows her very well, Bridget Gaynor, an incredible public servant, a good friend of mine, and a good friend of the City Club. Commissioner Gaynor, thank you for putting this all together, and thank you for your remarks.
Yeah. Thank you. I have the great pleasure of introducing our lead speaker today, Jessica Caffrey. So I'm going to say a few things and then bring her up here. Put these on to make all you old people feel better. So good afternoon, and thank you all for coming. It is great to see a room packed with people who are all so focused on moving Chicago forward. We sold out, as Danny said, and had a waiting list, which shows you that even in difficult moments, this is a community that shows up for one another. So part of that community is my fellow elected officials, and I know that Dan introduced them, but I do really want to call out my colleagues on the board, Donna Miller and Bridget Degnan, and, of course, President Preckwinkle, who has been on the path of community development since she started in politics many, many years ago. And I really want to appreciate all the developers in the room, the builders, the rehabbers, all those who see a vacant house, the possibility, hire a crew, buy materials, rehab to perfection, sell to a homeowner who buys then materials to decorate the house and then pays taxes, and ultimately transforms that vacant house into a vibrant neighbor. And a point of pride, there is over $56 million in taxes from land bank generated properties and counting. Thank you. So the land bank started after the financial crisis, which I don't need to tell anyone in this room about because we all lived it. And most of us, including my four fellow panelists, know it over a lifetime since all of us grew up in Chicago, South Side, West Side, and long before 2008, saw redlining, white flight, contract buying, and tax sales that left some neighborhoods holding the bag on disinvestment. And then the 90s, which used blight removal to put the problem out of sight and out of mind. And I'm going to call out President Preckwinkle again here because she is one of the few who during that time really pushed back on demolition as a solution and insisted on building. And that is what we are here to talk about today, a solution that's building. Building with local developers, sweat equity, eager home buyers, all of them true believers in Chicago. And even the chaos in Washington cannot touch the trajectory of this development with the land bank. You can bring all the Doge chainsaws you want, but we are a house built of brick. Yes. Because after the taxes generated by formerly vacant land bank properties, the land bank is a net financial contributor to the city, the county, and municipalities. We leverage the strength in our city to create wealth, new life, and opportunity. But you cannot do that without leadership. And today I have the great pleasure of introducing the woman who leads the land bank with vision, purpose, and tenacity, Jessica Caffrey. So, hold on. I'm not done. You cannot do the job she does with only expertise, though she has decades of real estate expertise. And you can't just do it by knowing how government works, though she has navigated city, county, CHA with grace and professionalism, probably the hardest part. You cannot get success only through relentless operational excellence, and she has that in spades. Because this is not an exercise of just the head. It is a marriage of the head and the heart. Jessica has a mission for this work. She refuses to tolerate the wrong things, and she fights for the right ones. And I will add, always with grace. Jessica Caffrey is the total package. She brings a vision for what communities need to thrive, what developers need, what homeowners need, and what the system needs. And she thinks big. She can give care and attention to a single-family home development, but also land a whole block of single-family homes. She can help small businesses thrive while also steering whole commercial and industrial developments. Jessica has transformed the operations of the land bank, and we are all fortunate beneficiaries. So I am deeply grateful as a resident of the city that she gives all her gifts to us. Jessica Caffrey.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Commissioner Gaynor, for that introduction and for your vision of creating the land bank. Thank you, President Preckwinkle, for your steadfast support and leadership from day one. You've always taught me to look out for the least of them. I'd like to thank the City Club and Dan Gibbons for the invitation to be here today. Thank you to Alderman Burnett, Jim Reynolds, and Louis Castro for being a part of this crucial conversation. A quick shout out to Alderman Burnett, whose ward has seen almost 25% of the new home permits in Chicago over the last 4 years. Yeah. A special thank goes to the Land Bank board members in attendance, and our dedicated land bank staff, all of those in this room who I have witnessed their commitment on a daily basis. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't thank everyone in this room who has had some connection with the land bank. Can you raise your hand if that is you? All of those hands are people who are in some way responsible for the tremendous success of the land bank. Thank you for being here today. I've been in this role for a little over 2 years now, and I can tell you that these have been some of the most impactful years in my long career of public service. From the beginning, the vision was of a land bank that could remove red tape by clearing title and liens, giving small developers the ability to purchase properties, rehab them, and turn their communities around. That model, plus a commitment to operational excellence, has made the land bank a success. Last year, we completed a 10-year economic impact report to quantify our success. It found that the land bank generated $371 million in direct economic impact since its inception. That includes tax revenue, jobs, and impact from our partners in the construction and real estate industry. Part of that $58.1 million in property tax revenue from the county was from properties that were previously generating nothing. That's also indirect impact, which is from things like stabilizing the tax base. Because every time someone develops a property from the land bank, that increases the values of the other properties in the neighborhood. Those increased values plus the created wealth add up to $1.44 billion in indirect impact. So that means our total economic impact over the first 10 years is about $1.8 billion. Now, those are the numbers. And while they are big, they are a small part of the story, because behind every number is a person whose life has changed and a community impacted by a new or an expanding business. As public servants, that's why we do the work that we do. I want to tell you a few of those stories to bring those numbers to light. In September, the Land Bank celebrated its 2,000 rehab property, a home in Auburn Gresham. This home was a... This home was acquired through the land bank by Titus Henry, a contractor-turned-developer. He bought the property, secured financing, and transformed this house. In the process, he created jobs for several people, several tradespeople, and even mentored young people through a partnership with Metropolitan Planning Services. He hired a young woman who's sitting right here before me to do the tile work, and that experience inspired her to start her own business. As soon as the house was done, Titus sold it to Jeffrey Green, a CPS teacher and a first-time homebuyer. Jeff fell in love with the house, and when he saw it, he wasn't sure that he would be able to afford it. But thanks to the equity fund created by President Preckwinkle, we were able to offer him up to $20,000 in purchase assistance of this new home, and now it's his. Several years ago, a woman named Starnella Johnson wanted to expand her floral business in Roseland and own her own building, not rent. So she purchased a commercial property through the land bank, and now the property belongs to her. And she's employing people and students and growing every year. In Englewood, Dr. Marlon Haywood, who founded an organization called the Urban Male Network, wanted to honor his late grandmother, Annie Mae, and do something good for the community. Through a partnership with residents of Greater Englewood, or RAGE, Marlon received a deed to a vacant lot across from his late grandmother's house and turned it into Annie Mae's Court, a brightly colored space for the community to gather and for the kids to play. Over in Austin, a resident named Angie Phillips now has access to high-quality health care in her own neighborhood thanks to the land bank providing property where the new PCC Wellness Center now stands. In Woodlawn, a group of five developers came together to buy back the block and redevelop 11 vacant lots into 10-3 flats, revitalizing the whole block with 30 beautiful new homes. We also partner with municipalities to help them transform the economic landscape of their communities. For example, in Bellwood, we facilitated the sale of 25 vacant lots for new construction that were previously generating no tax revenue. Today, they generate $228,000 per year in tax revenue, and those projects help to create an estimated of 50 jobs. And we can't forget our vendors like Clean Slate and Caracare, a workforce development program that creates job opportunities for returning citizens. Over the last 10 years, Clean Slate has helped us maintain over 400 lots. They've become our biggest vendor, and their work with us has created 250 jobs for returning citizens like Sam Lovett, who started with Clean Slate in 2017, and he is now the Senior Manager of Business Operations. You'll hear from Louis Castro in a few minutes about the land bank, how it has impacted his life as well. Now, these are the real results of our work. And when I tell you there are thousands more stories like this, I mean it literally. Because the land bank impact is like a ripple in a pond, it may start with one house, but then it ripples out to the developer who's contracting or building a business, the electrician apprentices who are learning a trade, the suppliers who are looking to grow, the real estate brokers, the home buyers, the neighbors whose property's values increase, and the community gets more vibrant and starts attracting more investment, and it becomes a virtuous cycle. These stories show how revitalizing one property can lead to broader economic growth, increased property values, and a more vibrant community. Even as we've been reflecting on the past decade, we're also looking ahead. Our county continues to face challenges from housing affordability and commercial vacancy to persistent economic inequities that demand innovative solutions. And just like the land bank was innovative 12 years ago, we intend to maintain that legacy. So today, I want to share our vision for the future and what we're focused on for 2025. Then we'll move on to our conversation with our panel. First, our goal is to continue expanding naturally affordable home ownership and wealth creation. One of the ways we do that is providing more simultaneous opportunities to those developers who have the capacity to do more. We will also seek remediation funding for some of our more challenging properties. We can also link developers and business owners to the Cook County Department, Bureau of Economic Development for tax incentive programs for vacant commercial and industrial properties that can help reduce the property taxes by lowering the assessments from 25 to 10% for a number of years. In addition, with the Bureau of Economic Development, we can link buyers to our suburban land properties for grants on technical assistance on community gardens, public art, and more. BED has a number of programs, and we are working with them to make sure that everyone who is working with the land bank has full knowledge of those programs, including their CPACE program. Our work has already revolutionized the way the county once dealt with abandoned properties, and we look forward to continuing improving in that area. Second, we plan to expand our partnerships with developers, community and business organizations, and municipal leaders to create new commercial and residential developments in underserved neighborhoods. This type of development is key to the economic growth of a community. So we want more small businesses, more vibrant corridors, and more economic opportunity for local residents. Third, we will maintain our policy on transparency and public engagement. Part of what makes the land bank work exceptionally is that we are so accessible to the public. We have an online portal, we conduct public outreach, and we are active on social media. Later this year, we'll hold our fourth home giveaway, which has been a great way for the public to get involved and respond to the RFP for the redevelopment of a property. We hold regular seminars that teach aspiring developers how to work with us. In fact, our next event is coming up on Friday, March 14th, and anyone who wants to learn how to acquire and rehab properties with resources that support commercial and industrial property through the land bank, please attend. This is great for someone who wants to expand their business. You can use the QR code to sign up. Fourth and finally, we will continue to optimize our inventory strategy to grow in a sustainable way that ensures a long future. But as I mentioned above, the land bank is an ecosystem, and we all need parts of that ecosystem working together to achieve maximum impact. We need all of you in this room, whether you're a policymaker, a developer, a community leader, or a small business owner to partner with us. So here's what you can do. If you're a policymaker or an elected official, please continue to help us to remove the barriers to investment and support policies that drive equitable development. If you're a community leader, join us in making sure these properties benefit from the people who need them the most. If you're a developer, take on a new project, turn a vacant lot into a home. If you are a CDFI, please work with our developers, fund their projects. I can guarantee you these are sound, worthwhile investments that will pay dividends in many ways. Because our success proves that when we invest in small developers, they invest in neighborhoods, and together we can unlock a future where people and communities thrive. Thank you all very much.
could come join us, I'd like to introduce Jim Reynolds, Jr., who is the founder and chairman, CEO of Loop Capital, and also an executive committee member of the Chicago Community Trust. Walter Burnett, who is the 27th Ward Alderman and Vice Mayor of the City of Chicago. And Luis Castro, who is the owner of LNMC Investments. All right, we're going to ask our panelists a couple of questions, and then hopefully we'll have time for questions from the audience. So thank you. So Alderman Burnett, we're going to start with you. You lead and have been a almost lifelong resident, but also lead one of the most vibrant wards in the city. But it actually, it has incredible development in the West Loop portion of that, and then still some communities on the Western portion that are struggling with redevelopment and in many ways are still kind of suffering from some of the legacies of disinvestment, even protests during the 60s. How do you manage to keep both parts of the ward growing and vibrant?
First of all, by not getting any sleep, so. Commissioner, first of all, I want to thank you. I want to thank Tony Prentwinkle and Jessica. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job with the land bank. Appreciate everything you do and the folks who come to my ward and do things on the land bank property. So we've been blessed to have a ward. You know, I've been alderman 30 years, so I grew up. But when I started, the West Loop was Skid Row.
Yeah.
Cabrini Green was Cabrini Green. Henry Horner was Henry Horner. Rockwell was Rockwell. West Humboldt Park was West Humboldt Park. So, you know, I always try to tell my colleagues that one of the things that really helped to get us started was priming the area with affordable housing. Because, you know, without the government investing in the community, then no one else saw an opportunity to invest. So when we started priming the area with affordable housing, other small developers started seeing that. They started buying houses, started rehabbing, and things just went from there. So it has to start from somewhere. So, and we're very blessed today to have government to invest money. You know, I think about in the 80s, over on LaSalle Street, on Dearborn Street, Presidential Towers, which I represented, they all got money from the federal government. I don't know if you all know that. Presidential Towers got money from the federal government, 1212 South Michigan, you know, 750 North Dearborn. I can name a lot of streets in the Gold Coast, a lot of buildings in the Gold Coast. When the market was bad, they had a real estate crash, government came in and they held them up and they were able to build those buildings, and it attracted so many other developments to come to those areas. Well, that's what we've been doing over here. So even in the West Loop right now, you say 4 years ago, my permit started being over 25%. You know, 4 years ago, what I did is I allowed development to happen on the north side of Lake Street. Then we came up with a thing where in Springfield, they came up with a thing where you can get tax credits, right? Where you can get tax credits if you do affordable housing. Because no one was going to build in my ward without doing affordable housing. When they did the tax credits, I allowed for that zoning to come up. Everyone just started building. And as everyone started building, everyone else wanted to build. And they started coming from New York. They started coming from all over the country, building in those areas. And it grew, and it just started swelling up and going further west, going further south. And the thing is, you have to be accessible. You have to be there to work with people in order for those things to continue to happen. So we've just been blessed to work with people, being accessible, having standard ways of doing development in our ward. You know, I'd be remiss if I did not mention the Department of Planning. You know, and even before, I appreciate Sierra, but even before Sierra was there, you know, Department of Planning made a thing where they met with me once a month for over 10 years. And they saw all the things coming. And we sat down, former commissioner there, we sat down every month and we worked on these things. The city was working on these things, trying to help them to keep moving and keep going. A lot of folks don't think that the city care about development happening, but the city does. And a lot of people in the city work very hard to try to make sure these things happen and push them along. So these things don't happen in a vacuum by themselves. It don't just happen just with me. It happens with a lot of people that work for the city of Chicago to make these things happen. And, you know, now we're trying to do things in the city to make things a lot easier for folks to get permits, for folks to buy city property. There's bond issues out there because we know with the economy being as it is that folks need money from government in order to make things happen. So we've been leveraging, trying to leverage our dollars to try to attract more people to the city of Chicago to do more development, not only in my ward. And, you know, I'm blessed now to be the vice mayor, so I can't just look at my ward, even though I'm still a little selfish, right? But at the same time, we look at the whole city now. So there's a lot of things going on with the missing middle. We got the green housing going on. We got over a billion dollar bond to go toward housing to invest in a lot of things throughout the city. And we're talking to some of those same small developers you all are talking to. Matter of fact, we kind of coordinate with each other. Some of these developments, we both get them money in order to make these things happen because we know, like for instance over in West Humboldt Park in my area, 11th District, one of the worst crime areas in the city of Chicago, I have houses over there going for $700,000 right now. A lot of people sleeping on that. And people are building and buying, and what we're doing with the public land, with land bank, with our land, is we're trying to fill in the other vacant lots with affordable housing so we can keep it a mixed community. So there's a lot of great things happening in the city that a lot of people aren't aware of, but there's a lot of development going on, and people even sleep on the fact that there's development going on where we may not see cranes, but there's buildings literally downtown where they're doing over 200 units where they're rehabbing a whole building, right? And those buildings count as development, count as construction, count as jobs. There's several of those that's going on downtown. And so there's a lot of development going on. There's been billions of dollars spent last year in the city of Chicago. Over 9,000 units of housing have been built last year. There's thousands of housing that's going to be built this year. And we can't take all the credit. The land bank is doing a lot, too. So I just say everyone working together and believing in the city and recognizing the fact that things are coming. Right. And you have to see them coming. And I'm going to tell you, and I sell my ward, too. Right. But I always tell people, you know, the west side of my ward, we're surrounded by all these other Wicker Park, Taylor Street, the medical district, West Loop. Everything in that U is prime for development. East Garfield Park, West Humboldt Park. And people started to believe it. They started to developing, and like I say, houses are starting to go for $750,000. So,
thank you. So, you know, the east side of a ward and the west side of a ward is kind of similar in some ways to downtown and neighborhoods. There's sometimes different stories. So, Jim, you know, you built a business here. You started a business here almost 30 years, also closing in on that, and obviously a deep kind of commitment to the civic work, but. You know, many people may not know, you also grew up in Englewood. And so you have a heart for the neighborhoods as well as a mind for downtown. And so when you think about the shared fate of downtown and neighborhood vitality, how do you think about connecting those two to make sure that they both rise?
Well, Bridget, first of all, thanks for having me here. It's good to be here and see so many of my friends. I won't start naming names because I think about 80 or 90% of the people in this room are friends and colleagues and associates. But it's a tale of two different things. You know, as I think about downtown, you know, my whole career, you know, 40 some years has been downtown. It's so amazing to think about it, how vibrant and active it used to be. When you went out for lunch, literally every lunch place was filled up. LaSalle Street, Clark Street, Dearborn Street, Madison, Monroe, Randolph. Everything was jam-packed. All of the activity was there and your social life was there, which is, you know, if they had this hybrid work from home thing when I was in my 20s, I don't think I would have had a friend. Everybody met up for happy hour downtown at 5 o'clock. Everybody. 5 days a week. And, or at least I did, you know, so. But now you look at downtown now and business has changed and things have changed. We recently moved our firm from Jackson Street to South Financial Place. Every property on Jackson Street from Wacker Drive to State Street, essentially the developers turned their keys over to the banks. They just gave up. And right now the trend is companies are not moving employees into those old buildings anymore. They're just, and they won't. To what Walter said, we're seeing some of them converted to housing, but it's too many to convert to housing downtown, and it's too expensive to do. We are going to need some federal and city and state intervention to really see what we can do to convert many of those buildings. The Google activity at the Thompson Center is going to help bring some density downtown, but it's going to be a workaround for quite a long time. But, you know, I spend probably more time, particularly because of my activities at the trust, you know, my former chair of the trust, and our focus on the wealth gap in communities. You know, coming from Inglewood at the time that I was there, living there, grade school, elementary, high school, you know, you saw vibrancy. I saw those communities in Inglewood and in South Shore when everybody worked and they were vibrant, and every basically available place on 63rd Street and 59th Street was filled up with a business. And now you look out now and you see vacant lot after vacant lot after vacant lot. And this is where the land bank, I think, is extraordinarily helpful. When I think about what we need to do for communities and people, I saw some folks from the CARA Collective here and those organizations that we support so much. When you think about those neighborhoods, you know, you see people that need an economic assistance, whether it's formerly incarcerated, whether it's retraining, whether it's job assistance, whether it's bringing businesses back to those communities, whether it's talking to Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 businesses to have them open divisions in some of those communities, much like MasterCard did or Discover Card in Chatham. We at the Trust made it a focus to help in that endeavor with closing the wealth gap, racial wealth gap. And what we decided to do over there was put our money where our mouth was with the Trust. It's one of the largest community trust foundations in the country. We decided to begin to invest in the people and the businesses in those communities to rebuild those communities, which is, you know, Bridget, the point you're getting at. One of the things, and I'll just speak to one vertical that had to do with home ownership, which intersects with the land bank. What we discovered, and I think what we all know, many of our families benefited from this. The stalwart, the base level of building wealth, almost for every American, was their home. Kids got their college tuition paid from mortgages on their home. A lot of the resources of a family came from the equity built up in that home. And renting a property any place is a losing proposition. It's meant to be a stepping stone to home ownership. You don't want to stay in that state of activity. When we look at the factors that impact wealth in the black and brown communities, so much of it is a lack of home ownership or vibrancy in those communities. So we decided to put money there. You know, we actually invest with developers. The riskiest part of any development is the pre-development expenses. Like, is this going to work before I put anything in the ground? That costs money. So we decided to do and help the developers with those. We decided to help with down payment assistance. It was the trust with the land bank that worked to pass legislation that stopped speculators, hedge funds and investment professionals stockpiling properties in communities, buying them off the tax rolls without having any intention whatsoever of developing them. but taking advantage of a little slight loophole called sale and error, that they can buy these properties for free, see if they can flip them, and if they couldn't flip them, they got their money back with interest. It was just a sophisticated big boys kind of play that took the individuals out. So, Bridget, to complete the answer to your question, it takes a lot of investment in the communities to do what we need to do, and we need economic engines. But it starts with owning your own home and stabilizing the communities in that. So I'll stop there.
Thank you. That was a great answer. I almost never want to interrupt someone who's talking about the scavenger sale and property tax reform. But going back to that base level, so Luis, one of the developers of the land bank and other places, you've developed all over the city, you've done different projects. Knowing that unit of single family housing is the base to build a community, to build not only community wealth, but personal wealth. What does it take for someone like you to put all that risk out there? What does it take to be successful for a small developer, whether it's from the city or the county or the environment? But what does it take to be successful?
First of all, wow, to be on the panel with these lovely people. First, I want to say thank you to President Preneweekle, Commissioner Gaynor, Jessica, Alderman Burnett, Mr. Reynolds. Growing up, I was born in Humble Park, believe it or not, when it was Humble Park. Went to Logan Square, went to schools that were, you had to go outside the building into little houses that you're freezing in the winter, and they called it that. That was school. So being raised in poverty and to sit in a panel where I'm at right now, that is a blessing. So thank you all. Every single one of you. To answer your question, let's go to the scavenger sale, if I may. Starting there.
Yes, you may.
First of all, you have to go there with money. And so, you have the hedge funds, you have the big money people constantly bidding you out and just sitting on these properties. So one year I was there, and all I heard was no cash bid, no cash bid, no cash bid. I was like, what is going on, huh? So come to find out, Land Bank was formed. Bravo. Bravo. For a small-time developer such as myself with no resources of fund, because if you get a scavenger property, you have to then find an attorney to clear up the title. So now your funds are held by the property that you purchased. Then you're dishing money into an attorney to prove up, clean title. It takes months, years, depending on the kind of the property it is. Small developers don't have that. We have to move our money, right? Then Land Bank had said, hey, we're going to clean up all the mess. And not only are we going to sell the property to you, we're going to sell it to you at a discounted price. Fantastic. And we're not going to give you no income limitation. We're going to help you guys see you through. And anything you guys need, we'll be there for you. And that is what the Land Bank has done. And now 100% of my new construction business is Land Bank. I want to make that clear. I do not seek any land from MLS, from militaries. Everything I do is 100% Land Bank. And I've done affordable housing through the city of Chicago, and we all know the city of Chicago is fantastic. I love Chicago, but sometimes it's difficult and complicated to get through the process through the city. And I did one stage of affordable housing in Humble Park, and that's how I came across Burnett. And Burnett was like, I want you in my ward, Lewis. I want you in my ward. I was like, Burnett, I'm small time. I don't have the funds. Just please give me some time. We'll figure it out. What I can say about Alderman Burnett is that he has been 100% fighting for me, advocating for me, without me even being in his ward. And guess what? I am 100% in his ward developing right now. So to answer your question is that the Land Bank has been a blessing, and it's great for us small-time developers. Where else can you build a home? Land Bank is saying that we're going to give you, the buyer, $20,000 for down payment assistance and or credit costs. Not only that, you have government like NHS, 100% financing on single-family homes. Now, guess what? You get 100% financing for a single-family home purchased through the land bank. Land bank now gives them $20,000 that they can use to buy down that interest rate that has gone so high that put them out of pricing. Now, guess what? Now we have people affording housing, right? And that's what I love about land bank. And I think I answered your question, didn't I?
Good. So getting to Jessica now, and Jessica, there's, you know, you just have to look at a map of vacant land in Cook County, and you see it everywhere. So there's a lot of vacant housing, but the land bank properties are always in demand, and there's always a demand for the vacant housing that's gone through the land bank of the vacant land. How do you bring more properties to bear? How do you get that process moving, and how do we continue to grow and make more opportunities for people like Luis?
Thank you, Commissioner. So the first thing is coordination with aldermen like Walter Burnett, coordination with community organizations like RAGE, coordination with anyone who has a plan and a vision. So the land bank has the opportunity to a number of properties, and a lot of times we advertise those properties on our website. And at that time, a developer, a small business owner is able to come to us, and they're able to say, hey, this is what we're looking for. Now, over the years, our inventory has changed. And our inventory, as it relates to residential, has decreased, which is a good thing in the sense that there's not as many foreclosures. But what we do have is vacant land. So while we still have that, and we have commercial and industrial properties, and we still have residential, just not as many. And so what we're doing is that we're looking at our inventory strategy. We're talking to our aldermen. We're looking at the groups that they're working with to see how we can maximize our efforts together. Because if we put our brains together, we can do a lot more if we did it single-handedly. So we put our thoughts together, and their people apply on our website for these properties. And that's how we continue to look at our strategies, and we optimize the opportunities for the public.
That's fantastic. So, Dan, where are we on time?
We've got 5 minutes.
Okay. We do 5 minutes for Q&A. Perfect. So I'm gonna give Alderman Burnett one more question, which is, you're seeing development not just in your ward, which is an interesting kind of representation of all kinds of development, but also across the city in your role as vice mayor. What can we be doing better to facilitate more housing and more development and more building? And, you know, one of the things that Dave Doric talks about a lot is repopulation of the communities that have really seen depopulation over the last 10 or so years.
So I think that, you know, I work with all of my community organizations. I think you need to work with the community organizations, and you need to help them to have a vision, that which they do with the planning department. And you need to help them to fulfill the vision. A lot of it is finance, right? I mean, a lot of the holdup right now is finance. A lot of people can't get money for whatever reason, and that's not going to be forever. We've been through this before, but at the same time, you need to connect with all of the government agencies and organizations like the trust. Everybody who's supporting these developments, you need to get with them to try to put a package together. You know, you almost have to be like a rocket science with some of these things, because it's like you have like 20 different piles of money in order to make these affordable projects happen. But don't just do affordable. So we do the City Lots for Working Families. Well, we give, like, I think one of the guys was here, we give them, they can build 80% that they build is affordable and 20% market, right? Melvin is here. So Melvin, you here, right? When Melvin built 80% affordable, 20% market, he built 80% affordable. All his units was affordable. He built 20% market. Those 20% market houses that he built, I think they went for like $900,000. And it balanced out. You know, him doing the affordable and him doing the market, right? So it balanced out for him financially, because this was over on the Near West Side before they even announced the 1901 in the United Center. He sold buildings over there for $900,000. So you got to be able to creatively work with folks to let them know what the opportunities are. And sometimes you need people to show you where they are, and you have to see them. And don't just think because you see vacant land. You know, when I When I was first talking about being an alderman, I was talking to a guy named George Dunn, and I was like, you know, they gave us an opportunity. I see all this vacant land, Mr. Dunn, as an opportunity, right? I see vacant land as an opportunity. And wherever you see vacant land at, it's an opportunity. So whatever it is today, tomorrow is going to be worth more. So develop in those areas where you normally don't think about developing at, and create a market for yourself. You can create a market in these communities if you would invest in these communities, but also utilize all of the resources at your disposal. And there's a lot of resources out here with the city, the county, the state. You know, everyone have resources. Utilize them all. You can put a package together and talk to folks like David Doik, who's a master, right? They know how to put packages together, of course, our planning commissioner, and work it. And if you work it, I mean, you can be successful.
Thank you very much.
Can I interrupt here and see if we have a couple questions? If you do have one, raise your hand. Your name, President Preckwinkle, has been mentioned a few times. You might have something.
So I want to thank Commissioner Gaynor for bringing this panel to us, and, of course, Jessica for her good work. I just want to say something about Alderman Burnett. When I was in the City Council for 20 years, I tried to champion affordable housing. One of my great allies was Alderman Burnett. And what I always say is, you know, I was part of the loyal opposition, but he was one of the people who was an insider. And nonetheless, he was a consistent and vocal supporter of affordable housing when he had a lot more to lose to do that than I did. So I just want to thank him for that good work.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions? I know our audience is very informed and involved. David, you've been through all sorts of these. Here's one over here. And then we'll hand it back over to you, Commissioner Gaynor, to wrap.
No pressure.
Hi, everybody. I'm Yale Harper. Jim, you mentioned the Color of Wealth report, which says the median black wealth in Chicago is $0, which means half of black Chicago has negative wealth. As you think about home ownership and development, and this is to all the panelists, is there any focus on single-family homes and how African-Americans can acquire single-family homes as a way to shift that median black wealth in Chicago from zero to a positive number?
So that's a stat that we put out, and that's part of the data that we put together as we at the trust. I don't think Andrea's here. Okay, she didn't make it. When we decided to delve into actually helping developers develop some of this land, they reached out to us over the years because they just didn't have the funds to do the pre-development. We put some money out there with them as a grant, so they didn't have to pay it back. We actually also invest in home ownership with some of the individuals with the communities that we've selected. We are doing as much as we think we can, and there's more to do, with getting funds in the hands of people to own housing. That's a dramatic statement when you look at the difference between wealth of the average white family and black or brown family basically being zero to negative, with many people just going from paycheck to paycheck, with no equity any place in sight. And so we're addressing, and I'll just say a bigger picture about the trust. You know, when I came on as chair, I came on just ahead of a woman named Helene Gale. And she's one of the most amazing leaders I think we've ever seen. We decided to tackle some serious issues in Chicago. We decided we weren't going to give $5,000 and $10,000 and $15,000, $20,000 to a bunch of organizations and just say you're getting along okay. We looked at some deep issues. Actually, I received an award recently, the Lincoln Leadership Prize, and in my speech, I said, I want to go to a maximum security prison to see what they do with the inmates in there. Because in my just anecdotal experience, I saw guys that would go in, men and women, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and come out with no skills, with no jobs. And just to think about how you can house these people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and decide you're not going to teach them anything or any skills when they come out just didn't make sense. So I decided to go. The police took me in there. It was a nice escort with them. And my whole board wanted to go with me. And we went to Pontiac, and we spent time with the inmates in Pontiac. The classrooms that they were in, what they did all day, what they ate, how they slept, what those cells were like. And it was really, it was an eye-opener to see what we need to do to revitalize some of those communities and the skills and the training and the assets that we need for the formerly incarcerated that wind up coming back to a handful of communities. So it's a big question. It's a deep question that you ask in terms of attacking this racial wealth gap, but it's real. And home ownership is a big part of it. So Bridget, so proud of what you and Jessica are doing at the land bank, because the anchor of it all, even when you saw the pictures that we had up here, the smile on the face of the gentleman that bought that house, and also the gentleman that had accumulated the funds to buy that house and redo that house to sell. And so that's a self-perpetuating economic engine that we have to put in those communities and continue that. And so that's a lot of what we're doing at the Trust. And the racial wealth gap is a large part of it.
Thanks very much. One more? Wrap up? All right. Well, I just want to thank, obviously, the panelists, but really everyone in this room. You know, so many people here are leaning in every day, taking risks on things that may not make any sense if you looked at it on a balance sheet in the beginning, but end up being the thing that makes all the difference. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful day and appreciate your support.
Thank you. I'm going to mention two quick things before you head out. We do have two more programs coming up. This was a perfect one for City Club. This is an ecosystem. We're actually making solutions, encouraging solutions. We've got Tom Skilling and Don Wubbles taking Tom Skilling out of retirement to talk climate change on Wednesday, April 2nd, and City Clerk Anna Valencia on Tuesday, March 25th. So much more to come. Please come back. Please up your membership. Thank you for being here. Thanks again to our panelists. Have a great day.